Hi, this is Ron Sylvia with Purpose Driven Church Planting, and we're in the studio today to talk about the mistake-driven church. Not that mistakes drive us as a church, but the truth is what we all know is we all make our fair share of mistakes. And I have joining me in the studio today two good friends, Hal Mayer, who's a lead pastor over at Church in the Bay down in Tampa, Florida, and Cole Phillips, who's at the Connection Church in Kyle, Texas. And both of these guys have made their fair share of mistakes. And, you know, guys, as I've thought about the mistake-driven church, I have gone to conferences and I've heard the leaders of conferences say something like this: we make more mistakes than we get it right. And then they never tell us what those mistakes are. You know, and I'm going, I want to know what the mistakes were so I don't repeat them. And yet, you know, that's exactly what we're going to do today. We're going to kind of, you know, hold a mirror up to ourselves and what we've learned and the mistakes that we've made in the process, because all three of us have planted churches now. And Cole, why don't you give us a little download about the Connection Church and where you guys are, when you started, and also why don't you tell them your website in case people want to take a look at the church.
Thanks, Ron. I started the Connection Church just outside of Austin about 18 months ago. And in that time, I was able to avoid a lot of the mistakes that a lot of people have made just simply because of your teaching and being a part of your coaching network. And so that's helped me tremendously. But at the same time, there are so many things that that we were able to do that were right, and you can check those out at theconnectionchurch.org and see the good things. But then there are so many failures along the way, so many mistakes. And I've found it's not really whether or not you fail, but how you fail. Are you failing forward? Are you learning from your mistakes? And are you willing to step out and take risks? Because if you're not making mistakes, then you're probably not risking enough. And so I'm looking forward today as we talk to share some of those things, some of those mistakes that I've made, and how we can help other people avoid those mistakes along the way.
Well, we're all going to learn together, that's for sure, because I know Hal Mayer, and I know a lot of the mistakes that, Hal, you and I made together when you served on staff here at the Springs. Why don't you download a little bit about Church of the Bay?
Absolutely, Ron. Church of the Bay launched September 2005, and our website, by the way, is churchofthebay.com. But one of the things I did, because I'd heard your teaching on this, and having been in ministry a long time, I wanted to learn from mistakes. I sought out people who failed at church planting or didn't do as well and asked them, what would you do? And I kind of went opposite because I knew the mistakes they had made, but also learning from other mistakes I had made in ministry. So mistakes are a great learning place. In fact, I guess this is the case. If I haven't made any mistakes lately, I'm not taking any good steps of faith. Mm-hmm. So mistakes are going to be there. The cool thing is if we can lift them up and learn from them, you can make different mistakes than us, and then you can email us and tell them what they were so we don't have to make those.
There you go. Well, I've heard, I think it was Oscar Wilde that said, experience is the name everyone gives to their mistakes.
That's right.
And so sitting in this room is a lot of experience, and also heard it said that an expert is a person who has made all the mistakes that can be made in a very narrow field.
So, absolutely.
So we're going to share those and just kind of back up the dump truck and unload a few of them here. And let's sit down, guys, in the area of leadership, because I know for me at the Springs, we made a lot of mistakes when we started the church in the area of leadership. And we know that everything rises and falls on leadership. And the leadership temptations in the first days of a new church are one of two thoughts. One temptation is put together a leadership structure too soon and make it a pretty expansive structure with boards or positions and policies. And another temptation is on the other end of the spectrum, and that's fly solo with no accountability. And both extremes are dangerous for a church planner. Both accountability and counsel are essential, but you know, for us at the Springs, I moved way too quickly on choosing the first leadership team. I felt like I needed some people around me. I came from a highly structured church, and I felt like I needed some structure. So, and you know what it's like in the early days of a church. I mean, if somebody walks in the door and, you know, they've known Christ for more than a month, you know, they're elder material.
Right.
You know, so because you just don't know people, and they're all brand new. And so I just handpicked some guys that I liked and guys that had been Christ followers for years and asked them to be the leadership team at the Springs. And that was dangerous. It proved to be very dangerous because they didn't know the vision of the church yet. They didn't know. They weren't there long enough. They didn't know where we were going, what we were doing, who we were. They had a lot of baggage, and they had a lot of their own opinions that they brought to the table. And we rushed into that structure, and it really damaged us because I know the real red flag for me was sitting in a leadership team meeting and one of the guys standing up and saying that the church is not for lost people. He said the church is for believers. Evangelism is for what we do outside this church. This is not about lost people. And, you know, I'm sitting there going, I thought I knew this guy. I thought he understood. And man, my heart sank, and I just, you know, it was kind of like, Houston, we have a problem. And so, you know, at that point, I had to just, you know, look at him and say, no, you're wrong. And it is about people that are far from God and people that don't know Christ. And that's one of the purposes of this church. And so he left, and basically what happened was that entire leadership team disbanded. And in the early days of a church, it was interesting. People have asked me, well, how'd you disband a leadership team? And you know, I just stopped inviting them to meetings. You know, I stopped calling meetings, and they just left. And here's how I know they were not leaders. To this day, nobody has asked where they went.
Wow.
And they weren't leaders. They weren't influencers. They were looking for positions. And so we moved much too quickly, and my encouragement to all church planters would be move slowly. There's not a rush on this thing in leadership. And Hal, in regards to leadership there at the Bay.
Yeah, I mean, hearing you say that over and over again before we launched the Bay, I determined with the staff that we had seven of us actually going over there, that what we would do would not have anybody in charge of other people. We wanted all the servants we could get. But we were going to wait for leadership to emerge as opposed to anointing them. Because I've made the mistake before. People come from another church. I did this, this, and this. And I go, oh, great. And they don't know our vision or our purpose. And it has really helped, Ron, because it's allowed us to see how people serve. And from that, you get the opportunity to lead. But hearing that caution from you probably saved me from making some of those mistakes. Now, there was a mistake that almost hit us, that we avoided the night before our first launch team meeting. I had a guy who was going to help us on staff, and he kept asking me about who would report to him, And, you know, I was so glad to have somebody who was going to be taking care of some of the creative arts. I didn't care. And then finally I realized this guy wants to be in charge, which meant he couldn't be. And fortunately God saved us from having to go through that. Before our first launch team, the night before, I got an email from him saying, hey, this isn't going to work. And although it hit me hard, I realized that was God saving me from a mistake that might have been tough to recover from.
That's great, because that whole leadership emerges concept is huge in a new church. And because we watched that at the Springs. We watched leaders emerge, and those are the men and women who have hearts for the vision. They're going to dive in and serve. And that's where we found the whole next leadership team. I found them on the top of an old theater that we were renting at the time. You know, with Clorox and rubber gloves, scrubbing mildew off the top of the theater. And those were, in that meeting, I found three men that were the next leadership team, and they were servants. They weren't looking for a position, you know, as opposed to, I know we've all had people come into our churches, and, you know, I had one guy walk in early days, and he said, I want to be a leader here. I don't know if you ever had that happen. I'm thinking, really? He said, yeah. He said, I want to be, you know, one of the guys that helps make decisions around here. I really love what I see. And I said, well, that's great. I tell you what. And I learned from leadership team number one. And I said, I tell you what. We're cleaning up right now, so if you go in that closet over there and just grab a vacuum, and if you'd vacuum the lobby for me. Mm. And he just looked at me so puzzled, and he said, no, you don't understand. I want to lead. I want to be a decision maker. And I said, well, that's where leadership starts here at the Springs. Mm. And if you can't serve, you can't lead. And you know, and that's there's another one that happens in leaders. So I don't know if this happened to any of you guys, but our tendency is we find somebody who's a leader in the community, you know, whether it's a big banker or an influencer in the community, and they show up, or a big doctor or a lawyer, and they walk in, and everybody goes, hey, do you see who's here? Do you see who's here? And automatically what people want to do is, you know, the temptation is they're a leader in the community, they should be a leader in the church. Don't do it. Don't touch it, because that might be the most carnal person on the planet. And I've watched that too. I mean, I've watched churches put this carnal banker over the finance committee or finance team, and you're like, I mean, it's a recipe for disaster. So, I mean, in the area of leadership, take your time. Find men and women who are godly servants, who own the vision, and will step up to the plate and serve.
I think as leaders also, we have this need for some accountability, and we want that. And so one thing that you might consider doing that we've done is to actually get some pastors that are outside of the church that really can speak into your life and that can bring some accountability in, and they get it a little better. Make sure they're people that you trust and they're in line with your vision, but they don't have to be necessarily from inside the church in order to be leaders.
Yeah, and that's you know, the whole accountability thing, Cole, is funny to me, because people want you to be accountable, you know, and when they say that, what they mean is they want to control you. Yeah. They don't really want you to be accountable. And the thing I've learned about accountability, there's a fallacy in accountability. You can only be accountable to who you choose to be accountable to.
And it's relationally based.
Yes, and it's people that you choose that you invite. Like these guys that you talked about, you invite them and to hold you accountable. Well, there is no board on the planet. There are no committees. There are no deacons that can make you accountable. Right. That's not going to happen. They will not, unless you invite them into accountability in their life.
Accountability is like locks on the door. We put locks on our doors to keep honest people from breaking in. If you're a crook, you're going to get in there. And accountability is for people who are wanting to walk straight and follow God and such. And if I don't want accountability, you can put me under a board. But, bro, I'm smart enough. I can figure some ways around it.
Yeah, some of the most accountable people on the planet have gotten into some of the worst trouble.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, and that's... So, I mean, but there is a need for that, and
right.
You have to have it, and I had to have it, and that's why I surrounded myself with a group of men that I trusted, and that second team was that. And I would encourage you, just in the whole, let's dialogue the leadership structure, because we made mistakes there. I think we all come with our church baggage of the way we used to do it or the way we had it, whether it was a board or a committee led or whether it was a deacons or... You know, whatever, and we think we got to assemble this quickly, and there's two words that I heard Rick Warren say and challenged us about 6 months into the Springs. It was simple structure. Keep it simple. Mm. Don't try to build this bureaucracy of leadership, and you have to keep it simple. Don't set up a leadership structure that has many levels and committees. Streamline it. Keep it simple.
Well, you look at the book of Acts in the early church, and you had 12 apostles, and you had thousands of people who were being saved. And so it doesn't – how many leaders does it take to lead a church, especially in the early days of the church? You're it. Mm.
The other challenge, Ron, with multiple layers of leadership that I've noticed is this. If you're the primary vision bearer, you've got it. Your staff, the leaders have to catch it before they can lead, or else the division gets diluted again and it gets shared as something that's not what it is. So what actually happens is it loses its strength at every level of dilution or every level of leadership. So especially when you start, I'd be very careful putting much leadership over other people in place, only because they need to get the pure vision from you. It takes a while for everybody around you to understand that vision. We've been together now as a staff almost 6 months in this church, and we're just now getting it. So if they're just now getting it, how far is the church from that? So if I'm going to ask a layperson to pick that up. So just to keep the vision pure, especially as you begin, let it emerge.
Yeah, it takes a lot of time to get to know somebody and to really learn who they are, how they operate, especially when they're leading other people. You've got to take some time to really fill that out.
Yeah, it's good input, because I think that the overarching principle is here, don't surrender the leadership of the church to laity. You know, you're the leader. And when you surrender it to laymen, it's not that they're like a lower class, but again, you're the vision caster, you're the vision bearer. And I think when we surrender leadership, so soon on in this process, it's going to throw a monkey wrench in the spokes there.
Yeah, surrender ministry to them.
Yes.
Allow them to own ministry. And what we've found is when people have a chance at ministry, they don't care about the leadership. Man, to sense God using you and being able to pour your life in the lives of other people. It's Rick Warren that says the pastor has to give up the ministry of the church to the lay people, and the lay people have to give up the control of the church to the pastors.
Yeah, I found that and you guys know what this is like in a bureaucratically structured church. You've got this whole group of committees that are making decisions, and then you've got the ministry team that's out there on the front line doing the ministry. And so in a simple structure, it's the people out on the front lines are the ones making the calls. Yep. They're the ones that know what they're doing. And you can structure a church for control or for growth. And I've found that I just need to get out of the way and let God work. And he works best in that kind of structure.
Yeah, boy, when you're talking about leadership issues in a new church, it's literally a minefield. I mean, there are a lot of explosive moments if you're not careful. Well, let's shift gears, guys, because one thing that I have found in the new church is the first year of a church, there are a lot of things that you have to say no to. Because you cannot do everything, and you're focusing on building the church, getting this thing off of the launch pad. And I think it was Howard Hendricks that said that the secret of concentration is elimination. So let's help church planters right now eliminate some things from their vocabulary, eliminate some things from their work hours, I think this one might rock their worlds a little bit.
Yeah, Ron, when we started, we basically said, as we begin, we are intentionally out of balance. And so there's some things we won't do, but we're going to be out of balance. And the first thing we're going to make happen is this weekend, the weekend service and everything that feeds to that, the children's ministry, the greeters, and such as that. We've got to get that in place where it's a safe place for us to bring our friends.
Everybody that's listening to this right now, I think you just need to say with us together. Let's all just learn to say this word. It's hard to say. Two letters, no. Just say no.
Yeah, the first thing we need to say no to, we need to say no to a core group.
Boy, yes.
That core is a four-letter word. And the purpose-driven model is we're crowd to core, not core to crowd. Thanks, Cole. Because most churches that are started and planted today are core to crowd. They start with a core group. They meet for Bible study. They spend time together. They begin to worship together. And then they somehow think that this little core is going to evolve into a crowd. And it's easier to turn a crowd into a church than it is to turn a church into a crowd. And so the core group, if you're starting right now and you have a core group, I would tell you change your terminology, change your operating procedure. You don't have a core group. You have a launch team. The core group tends to turn inward. They tend to be feed me, take care of me, meet my needs, do what I want. They are launch team members. They all have responsibilities, and their responsibility is to build a crowd. So the core group mindset needs to go away.
Yeah, it's a focus of, okay, how are we going to launch? As I've talked with guys on this issue, what happens with the core group, they get love and that hang time with the pastor, and this is great. I've got my own pastor, and there's about five people, and you can call them anytime you want, and it changes quickly. And so the thing is to start with people and say, okay, you're part of the launch team. We're going to get us off the ground that way, because core sounds like leadership. Core sounds like I'm one of the disciples or the apostles.
And the hard truth about that is the people that are in your core right now are not the ones that are going to stay with you for the long haul. So if you start changing the vision to meet the needs of your core, then you're never going to get to where God wants you to be in this thing.
Cole, that's a great point, because we need to realize that I think the stats are that within 18 months, most of the people you start with will no longer be there. That is frightening. You know, when you think about
it. Yeah, you're scaring me to death, man. We're 6 months old, and I'm trying to see who's getting picked off.
It's a matter of, you know, okay, these people are there. They're there for a season. But you know, core in and of itself, it tends to let people think, again, like you guys have said, that they're leaders, that they're the focus. And they're not the focus. The focus is the people who aren't there yet.
And using that terminology has helped us, because when I've talked to people about helping us launch, I say, give me a 3-month commitment. And what it's done is they realize they don't have to make a core commitment or be there every week, and they get on for 3 months, and at the end of that time, some go, this is a good gig, let's ride this. And others will go, see ya. And that's fine too.
That's good. So we're going to say no to core groups, because we have launch teams. And we're going to do another CD talking about launch teams and launching large and that whole concept. And that's a paradigm shift for a lot of people. But something else we need to say no to in the first year, and everybody kind of buckle your seatbelts and don't think we're heretics, but you need to say no to small groups.
That's huge. That's huge. We did that. We actually started, and I had this strategy in mind that we'd have one small group and we'd multiply out to 2 and 3 before we actually launched. And what it did was it caused people to judge what we were as a church and make their decisions about our church based on the groups rather than the church. And I was going, don't do that. That's not what we're about. Come and check us out on the weekends. And then I found once we got about a year into the thing, we were ready. And when we did our next slate of launching our small groups, it was a totally different feel, and we had much more success in it. So I think about a year in is probably the right time.
And in that, you know, we're a year probably in from our preview starts. One of the things I looked at in that too, Ron, was the number of a couple hundred people, not just a time frame of a year, but also tying that couple hundred, because I assumed that once we got a couple hundred people, we were healthy enough to be able to start something like that. The thing that happens, the pushback I got was, oh man, we got to go deeper, we've got to have community. And what I turned that into, I said, our launch team is going to be community. So here's where you're going to have community. You're going to have community as you work in the parking lot helping people park, and your community is going to be around greeting and our setup and teardown. One of the rules we have is nobody does anything alone. So they get that community component that you get in a small group while they're working, and it's healthier at the beginning.
Well, and I'm listening to this, Hal, and I'm knowing what a lot of people don't know who are listening to this CD. You're a small group guru. I mean, you are like the poster child for small groups. You wrote a book
yes.
on small groups.
Buy
my book. No, but seriously, the title, new title for your book?
Is...
we don't know yet. We're still thinking about
That's
it.
That's right.
So write in your responses.
Write in your title.
But you're, I mean, you're a small groups guy. And for you to sit here and tell church planters no to small groups, I mean, you have to really believe this, don't you?
Yeah, I really did, Ron. And that was the thing. I had planned, even when I got there, I was going to start some small groups. And you said, push away, push away, push away. And I thought, well, Ron doesn't know. But I listened anyway, and glad I did, because it allowed us not to do that. But we just launched small groups earlier this month with 25 home teams. We have over 200 adults now in community, going from none to that. But we had gone farther along. What I realized was small groups are imperative. You don't have a church without that. I mean, you cannot continue doing church just on the weekend. That, right. That's not the full deal. But we said we were going to be unbalanced as we started, and start small groups, the home teams, out of the success of the weekend makes it healthier. And it's what Cole said. The small groups then know what you're about, and they look like your church, as opposed to starting small groups when people don't know who you are and who knows what they look like.
Well, and small groups, too. Again, small groups are about fellowship, about community. And when you're small, when you're under 200, you have that on the weekend.
Right.
That's why we're saying no right now. And 200, a good benchmark is not no the first year or no until you hit 200
That's good.
On the weekends. So there's a good benchmark on small groups. Let's talk about saying no to members.
Well, membership class, and we did that. I just thought, you know, I'm all about being purpose-driven, and I thought, let's go ahead and get our membership class, get 101 going the first year. And you probably do need to get it going during the first year, but what we did, our big mistake, we actually had membership class before we even launched as a church. So we had people signing up and signing this membership covenant, and we hadn't even been going as a church. And so they were signing up for one thing, and they totally didn't see the picture of where we were going. No matter what I said, they didn't see it. And so a lot of those people fell away early on.
Yeah, and I think we feel we got to have members. We got to allow people to join, and and you don't, because here's the deal: you don't have anything for them to join yet.
Right.
you're not a church. You're still trying to figure it out. And what happens is they join on the front end, but you don't even have this vision fully focused yet. And so you've got to put them off. And what you do by putting them off and not having a membership class is you build this anticipation. And Hal, you've done that, and you're doing that right now because the Church at the Bay, you launched, and you're, what, 5 months old now?
We're 6 months old. We'll be 7 months before we do membership. And one of the things I wanted to do, I didn't want to do membership until what you said happened. They understood better who we were at a church. We've now got small groups going, and we've got the church going, and we're in two services, so it feels more like where we're going to be going. But we intentionally said no, and I had people all the time, I want to join. I love this place. You know, they're serving, they're giving. I want to join. I said, you can't yet. In fact, last week I said, when we do membership, it's really going to be cool because we don't have any members. The staff aren't even members yet. If we were to have a vote here, nobody could vote. That'd be fun. Everybody for and everybody against, it'd be the same. I don't know what you do. I guess I get the call, I win. But in the mix of that, the challenge is you start membership, you don't know who you are yet. You don't know who they are yet. And I'd like to give it some time to settle because, honestly, at membership, they will start walking away from you. Mm-hmm. And right now, I like the idea of a safe crowd there because I know when I begin to raise the bar, there's some people that go, oh, wait a minute. I didn't realize you're asking for that kind of commitment.
Mm-hmm.
So that's been our driving force behind this.
So put membership class off. And, again, purpose-driven class 101 membership is critical. But don't roll all this stuff out. Resist that urge to do it too soon. Take your time. Another thing to resist the urge on is our mergers. That's going to happen. Resist the urge to merge as a new church. You're going to have guys come who are, you know, in your town, and they've been there a while, and they've got about 50 people or 75 people, and they like what you're doing, and they're saying, hey, why don't we merge and come together?
That seems like the easy route, and you think, man, I'll bring in 50 people all at once, but it's going to cause problems in the long run. And especially if you're moving toward some level of success and you get on some people's radar, you're going to have that urge to merge. People are going to want to be a part of what you're doing.
Yeah, one of the things I would say, I would not merge with anybody. I'd do a takeover. What I mean by that is somebody's vision's got to prevail, and, you know, I'm really giving my life to this thing. If somebody wants to come and go through our membership process and all that and join us, that's a possibility. But just the idea of merging, because you don't have the same visions, and the dilution factor of that and then the inward family squabbling will guarantee that 2 week churches will be 1 week church.
That's good. I mean, I'm thinking about someone that I know that talked to me about this. Said, "Hey, I got an opportunity. They're going to give us a building, and it's going to take. They got a big financial, you know, bunch of money in the bank, and that's going to help us. And they said they're going to follow our vision. And I said, no, just say no. And the temptation overcame him, and he took the money and he took the building, and now a year later, he's paying the price. And, there's this inward squabble. There is, I think I heard Hal say it before, there's a purity of the vision that you have to protect. And when you bring in outside churches that have been established, they have their own baggage, and they're going to contaminate the vision, whether we like it or not.
Yeah. People don't join as a group. They join as individuals. So people can come in, come through the same process everyone else does, but they're buying in to the vision.
That's right. And just let me give you one last just say no. Just say no to youth ministry. And this one was hard for me. This is a mistake that I made. I was a student pastor for 10 years. And I could not imagine not having a church without a youth
That's
ministry.
The front lines, you know, is what we think of. So many youth ministers go in to plant a church, and that's where they know life change happens so well. And yet you've got to put that off. You've got to resist that urge.
Yeah, and we didn't. And we started it, and it just continued just to basically live on life support. Because we were still trying to grow the church. I mean, the weekends, it's about the weekends. And youth ministry is not the weekend, because most of the times the target of a new church are young families. And young families don't have teenagers. Young families have children. And that's another issue we'll talk about in a minute. But we said we could start a youth ministry, and we wound up with 10 kids. What we wound up with was a small group.
Right.
And we tried to pour money into it and time into it, and we wasted time and money that could have been better spent in other areas.
As we launched, we had a guy with a title, student pastor, but he knew very clearly what that meant, and we had people pushing us because we launched so large. Hey, start student ministry. I said, our first student ministry is going to be small groups. And so they did one event a month after we launched. So that was about 3 events. And we started small groups. We've now started that. That we are not going to do a student worship service or a student event in the sense of youth ministry until the small groups get large enough to fuel that thing. So it's going to start there. That seems healthy and normal, and it doesn't take all the energy that you're trying to build a crowd. And anybody's ever done student ministry, I've done that. It's really tough to speak to 12 kids and feel like you're doing something.
Well, also, if your worship service is a modern worship service, a modern style worship service, that's going to be as cool and as appealing to students as a youth ministry program would be.
I also want them at the doors. I want them at the welcome tables. Because these families with young kids, they're looking for what their kids are going to grow into. Mm. And so my deal is, I want them seeing these kids. I go, man, this is a church for me, because I love that kid over there, what they're doing. Look, that kid's getting to play in the band, or he's running sound, or whatever it is they're doing. And they give them a sense of future for their own kids.
Yeah, get those students serving, because they can be some of the greatest servants that you got.
Great job at that.
Yep. So those are some things to say no to. Just say no to core group, just say no to small groups, just say no to members, just say no to youth ministry, just say no to the merger. And and all of this, it might sound so contrary to everything you've ever heard, every model you've ever seen, but we want you to know that what we are going to walk you through at Purpose Driven is learning how to launch a church, not plant a church. And that's what we want to talk about on the next one.